Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel, back in North Cackalack. J.J., your cough is gone. I seem to have gotten it.
Going away.
No, I'm being optimistic. I think your cough is gone. You even sneezed only once the other day, which was a record-setting performance by you. Usually you're a 2- and 3-time sneezer, so happy to have that behind you. But so you might have to bring a little bit more of the energy in today's podcast. But we are counting down this week, though, JJ, with a big week. Revised top 10s, as we promised on Wednesday. Organization talent rankings today on Thursday as we record this. Top 100 Friday, tomorrow, as we record this. But it's Friday, February 12th. Celebrate Lincoln's birthday with us. Friday night, 9 o'clock Eastern Time on MLB Network. The Baseball America Top 100 will be revealed 100 to 51 during the day.
At baseballamerica.com,
easy for me to say, and 50 to 1 revealed at 9 o'clock on MLB Network, and we had a lot of fun doing that.
But then come back at 10:01, because at 10:01 we'll have the full 1 to 100
full list
with scouting rates, with ETAs, and with video, and a little video vignettes on each of the players in the top 100.
And don't forget, Monday, we're going to come back with a podcast explaining the whole process. We had a nice roundtable podcast with the two of us, Matt Eddy and Ben Badler, that we recorded. Matt's also a little bit under the weather. Ben is down in the DR. Otherwise, we'd involve them in this podcast as well. They were all involved as we did our organization talent rankings, JJ, and, go ahead.
But before we get there, we do want to remind you, as we talk about all this, the prospect handbook's available. If you don't have your prospect handbook yet, why don't you have your prospect handbook yet? If you ordered it from us, baseballamerica.com/store, or the 800 number, which John always remembers better than I do.
It's 800-845-2726, and again, order from us, you get 30 extra prospect scouting reports.
And you get it now.
And that's the key, is obviously we'd love it if you order the handbook in whatever way you choose to do so. Amazon, other, waiting for it to come to your neighborhood bookstore, if those still exist. We'd love for you to just pick up the handbook. But if you order it directly from Baseball America, you get it faster and you get a little bit extra. So definitely.
Usually we throw in, you may even get an I'm a Baseball American sticker.
Yeah, I'm surprised we don't just stick those in there like as a bookmark, in fact, that'll be in the next meeting. I'll suggest that. Baseball America bookmarks. The great thing about the handbook is that it's a great reference. You can read it all the way through in a sitting if you want to, or not one sitting, but you can read it all the way through cover to cover. But then during the year, you're always going to be going back to your prospect handbook. When players get traded, get promoted to the major leagues, you go to a minor league game, et cetera, et cetera.
So, you will be the smartest fan in the stands. That's what we want you to be.
And in order to do that, one of the things you have to know is where your favorite team ranks in our org talent rankings. Is your organization well-regarded by those of us who are expert in these matters or not? And JJ, usually of late, the teams that have ranked at the top of the organization talent rankings have not been teams that were contending. That's not the case this year. This year, we have two playoff teams, the top
usually it's
of our org talent rankings.
On the rise. We go right back. I mean, the Royals, obviously. Just to give a quick, the Royals were number one. We've had kind of two rankings over the years. Which
right.
It's always a little difficult because we kind of, it's always snapshots. But if you're looking at the talent rankings as we did them at the time of the prospect handbook, you were looking at the Royals were number one in 2011 with the greatest farm system of all time, copyright, trademark, whatever.
Right. And the Braves were two. And that was a good Braves farm system at the time as well, the Freddie Freemans and the Jason Hayward, those kind of guys were just breaking through with the Braves in 2011.
Then you go to 2012, and you're looking at the Nationals were number one.
And that was, so there's two different ones, as JJ was explaining. One we do with the handbook, and then one we do, which is done in December. And then we used to do a second one with our minor league preview issue in March,
which we still will do.
We'll do it.
We won't have to change this.
But that's right. But we're
finding more trades.
So we'll update it again. But this is really what we've decided is that the handbook, being our primary thing that we're known for a lot of people, not the only thing. We obviously magazine, website, but the handbook to me should be the primary ranking, and that's what we've done. So this is a handbook to handbook comparison. And that year, the Nationals were number one when we did the handbook. By the time we did it in March, they'd made some trades. They dropped a decent amount. But that year, in the handbook in December, they were number one.
Then you have the Cardinals were number one in 2013 with the group that basically we're still seeing the benefits from. That's the Carlos Martinez, the Michael Wachas.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the late Oscar Tavares. But
right. Carlos Martinez.
Yeah, it was a really good, an excellent system. 2014, we have the Pirates, and again, we're still seeing some of the effects of that. We're seeing the effects of some of that right now.
Organization of the Year being one effect of that right now in the 3-straight-year playoff run by the Pirates. I mean, it wasn't all at that one time, but that definitely was emblematic of, again, as JJ said, an organization on the rise.
And last year, the Cubs, and I don't think we've ever seen as dramatic and immediate impact as that Cubs number one farm system from last year had.
That might have to be like a Matt Eddy project. The greatest WAR contributed in the year after a team was number one in the farms in the rankings.
The Royals, I mean, it was a 4-year process to get there.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Even when they won the AL last year, you could make the argument, oh, but not all the, you know, the prospects were only a part of that. I mean, yeah, Hosmer was great in the playoffs, but now this year they really, it was those guys in many cases. But the Cubs, it was all right away. I mean, it was Addison Russell, it was Chris Bryant, it was Kyle Schwarber, it was Jorge Soler. It was all those guys who were, it was basically half their lineup in the postseason were guys who were top 100 guys last year. And that, before we get there, we'll get to number one. You probably already know it if you've gone to baseballamerica.com. But before we get there, we do want to explain a little bit the process, how we do this. And the best way I can say it is that what we, at least to me, what we have become more and more about is depth is nice.
Right.
Depth is important. But stars is where you are much more, you're going to rank where you rank in the organization talent rankings because of how many top 100, top 150, top 200 prospects you have than you are by having a whole lot of guys who would rank somewhere in the 300 to 600 range.
I totally agree. We've really just, that's been the evolution over the years for me is, you know, I used to really value depth. And there is value in depth. And I do enjoy a deep farm system. But to me, value really comes from stars. And that's the greatest value. And I also love, JJ, that people in the industry value, speaking of that word, our opinion, because I've already gotten texts about the rankings just going up from people. It's pretty funny. Obviously, ESPN's Keith Law did his organization talent rankings, so they're going to be compared and contrasted. I know that MLB Pipeline will do talent rankings. I don't think they are allowed to rank all 30 teams because you don't want to have someone be 30, heaven forfend. And I know there are other ranking services out there that haven't done all their organization lists yet. So this, as JJ put it very well, we're at the denouement of prospect season. You rank all the top for us, you do the league top 20s, you mix in the draft report cards, you rank the organization top 10s, you rank the 30s in the handbook, then you rank the talent, and then the top 100, and you're done. And then by that time, the season's about to start. In March, I don't give a damn about prospect rankings anymore. I want to see prospects playing in spring training on backfields or in major league games, and then in April the season starts. So we're very near the finish line of prospect ranking season, and that's one of the reasons why the talent rankings come at the end. And to me, JJ, you have to kind of do it in conjunction with the top 100 because you got to see who we think the stars actually are. Who are the guys who have the highest probability of being impact players? And the Braves are third for us. The Astros are two. The Dodgers are one. Those are three very different approaches, I would say, to farm systems right now. The Dodgers have the most star power of that group, but I don't think it's close, honestly, between those three teams. The Braves have maybe higher volume of potential stars.
I think they have the highest volume of potential stars.
They do, but the risk is, and that's their Manhattan Change Bank. They are going all in on volume, but I didn't feel comfortable ranking them number one because they don't have the talent near the top level of the big leagues like the Dodgers do, and second, I don't know if they have star for star. I like the Dodgers. Boy, the Dodgers' top 10 is really loaded. I mean, significantly loaded. As good as the Braves' young pitching could be, I'd still take the Dodgers system 10 times out of 10.
Again, if you use, everyone will see our top 100 tomorrow. If you use the methodology we use, the Dodgers answer. I mean, the Dodgers basically, it was the obvious answer.
It was, yeah.
When you look at how we do it, again, you look at studies, you know, that look at our top hundreds over the years, and they've always emphasized that really, the value of a top 10 prospect is significantly larger than the value of a top 25 prospect, which is more valuable than a top 50. And right. Really, once you get down to 50 to 100, the difference between the 50th prospect and the 100th prospect is way less than the difference between the 50th prospect and the first prospect.
Right.
Dodgers have, the Corey Seager Julio Urias 1-2 punch is extremely impressive.
And it's not just the talent that's impressive. It's that these guys have done it at upper levels. Urias is still 19, has had a lot of success at AA, less success at AAA. He's reached that level. And Seager was a three-hole guy in the big leagues in the playoffs. Very rare for a player to step into the three-hole of a playoff team like he did. And so he's, you know, that tandem is the best tandem in the minor leagues right now.
And their depth. I mean, let's not, again...
I think their depth is undersold. I agree.
The Braves system, again, we're looking, you know, comparing, contrasting 1 and 3 is the funny thing. But, you know, but the funny, when you look at the depth, I do think the Braves right now have the deepest system out there.
I agree.
I think the Braves have a system that it could be the runaway number one team, number one organization talent rankings next year.
Right.
Because most of the guys who we're talking about for the Braves are still going to rank next year.
Right.
The Dodgers,
they really shouldn't lose that many guys to graduation in the big leagues.
I mean, you could very easily, the top guys on their list, it wouldn't be shocking if Dansby Swanson was still eligible this time, you know, next year.
Oh, I mean, I think it'd be shocking if he weren't. He hasn't played season ball yet.
Sean Newcomb is a guy who, yeah, I mean, he could make it up this year where he loses eligibility, but it's very likely.
Right.
As he works on improving his control that he does it. Then you've got the Tuki Toussaint. You've got the Colby Allards. You've got the Max Fried coming back from TJ. There are a lot of fascinating prospects in that system. The Dodgers, though, have guys, a lot of guys, as you said. Seager, Urias, those guys, Seager will graduate. Urias may graduate.
Right.
Jose De Leon could graduate.
Right.
And then the thing that the Kenta Maeda, for our purposes, Kenta Maeda, he's a rookie.
And that means, you know, we don't have Kenta Maeda at the top
jacked
of our rankings like we had Daisuke Matsuzaka a decade ago. Or like we did Hector Oliveira last year. He's in the top 100. Not going to say where. Check it out tomorrow.
He's solidly ranked.
But he's solidly ranked, and maybe other ranking services don't consider him. You know, as long as Major League Baseball's rules consider him rookie eligible, and as long as we think people want to read about him, we're going to write about him and write about him as a prospect. But that's even Maeda. The Dodgers were number one before Maeda, JJ, before they had him signed.
The funny thing is we were doing our adjustments. Okay, we need to adjust this, and then came in here to kind of run it by you. Hey, I want to move this team here. By the way, the Dodgers, they're actually a higher number one because the Dodgers, since we ranked them number one in the talent rankings, have Kenta Maeda, who is going to step in and be immediately, you know, just step right in.
And if you have your Baseball America prospect handbook handy, and if you ordered from us, you'd have it in hand. You can see that Kenta Maeda was a 50 low,
mm-hmm.
And where was Diaz? A 50
high.
So you can slot them in on your own.
50 high.
You can slot them in on your own. Go find the other 50 highs in the Dodgers system and see where they'd go. Find where a 50 low would go. That's actually probably an article we probably need to do is how we, it's like 5 points plus for a low, it's a zero for a medium, it's minus 5 for a high, minus 10 for extreme, or maybe
Austin
even do
Barnes
it a little different than that.
50 low in
so,
the Dodgers system.
So there's
number
where,
eight,
that's where,
you know.
That's where Kenta Maeda goes.
Jose Peraza, who has been traded since, but he was a 50 low at number 4.
He gone.
That gives you the range.
That's
you,
it.
You know.
And in between, if those two 50 lows were what?
Cody Bellinger, 60 high. Grant Holmes, 60 high. And Alex Verdugo, 55 high.
Cody Bellinger. Prospect cheeseball. I love that. He's a personal cheeseball for me. I love that guy. I mean, I just think he's chronically underranked. I think he's underranked significantly in the industry. The other publications or rankings I've seen. What more do people want out of Bellinger than an athlete, young, plays center field, not just first base? If he's going to be a first baseman, he's going to be a premium defender at first base and big power. I love, and It doesn't hurt to have prospect pedigree. I love Cody Bellinger. He is definitely one of my favorite guys in the minor leagues.
Well, so what we're saying is that, now again, if you ask me where these guys, and that also throws in, do remember they added, which already was in our prospect handbook rankings, but Trace Thompson,
right.
Frankie Montas, Micah Johnson, oh yeah, just as added depth. Now, they also lost Jose Peraza in that deal. But again, the depth of this system, I don't know where all these guys are going to play, because they're not all going to play in L.A., but L.A.'s answer to a lot of this is we will acquire the talent and we'll figure out that problem later.
We'll sort it out later. Absolutely.
So they're number one. The Astros, to me...
And this, by the way, one more thing on the Dodgers. The Dodgers could have been even a stronger number one. They had two first-round picks last year. One they didn't sign in Kyle Funkhauser, and one already had Tommy John surgery in Walker Buehler. So just another factor in that. Now, and the Dodgers have, obviously, the resources to parlay this young talent into trades. They can pick up anybody they want, really, financially. So to me, the pressure's on. They have four general managers in the front office. The pressure's on. If Andrew Friedman can't win with the Dodgers in the next 2 years, what are they going to win? I'm being serious here. I don't know how the Dodgers, anything short of a World Series championship in the next 3 years, I don't even go 3, is a total failure
right.
and a big waste of money and talent. That's all there is to it.
Now, again,
they
it's
should
a
win.
When you get to the playoffs, but the reality is
no,
that
I know
it is.
Luck is a significant factor. I get it. But they have so many.
That doesn't mean it's not a failure.
But they check off every advantage that a team could want, that a franchise could want.
They are the Yankees of the 2010s.
Of this decade, they should be.
The Yankees are like, you know what? We're not going to spend on free agency this year because we want to stay under the luxury tax, reset it. The Dodgers are like shrugged shoulders.
And the decade when the Yankees spent the most was a one World Series decade in last decade. Mm-hmm. And spent more money than anybody in baseball with one championship to show for it. The Dodgers are headed in that direction. I mean, I have no feelings one way or the other. I don't have like a Dodger fandom or anything. My brother grew up a Dodger fan. But, I mean, if I were a Dodger fan, I would be extremely anxious that if the standard has to be extremely high for this team.
Yes.
And for me, they're really the only franchise that I look at as World Series or bust. They're the only ones right now.
And I would not say that. I'll say this, though. You compare them to our number two organization, and I would say that the number two has a somewhat...
I'm louder than you this time, JJ.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's crazy.
But our Astros are number two. The number two, considering what they've done over the last year and a half, in trades, in graduations and all, is a pretty amazing feat.
I would agree.
They graduated Carlos Correa, who's one of the best players in the game now.
Right.
They traded away. They graduated Lance McCullers, who's a key member of the middle to front of their rotation right now. He's not Dallas Keuchel, but if you told me that he's their number two this year, it wouldn't stun me.
Yes, I agree.
They have traded away Brett Phillips. They've traded away Vince Velasquez. They've traded away Mike Fulton-Ewitz. They've traded away Rio Ruiz. I can keep going. Josh Hader. Mark Appel.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Andrew Thurman.
Yeah.
Jacob Nottingham. We can just keep going.
Who else they traded the Phillies up for? I'm already blanking. Oh, Thomas Eshelman.
They traded away a ton of talent and acquired significant talent in return. I mean, Carlos Gomez was that was a blockbuster trade.
Right.
Scott Kazmir was a key addition for them. They traded away a ton of talent. But you look at this team right now, and even with that, this is a team that has front-end talent, and they have, again, I mean, we said that front-end talent impact is more important than depth. But one of the things that jumps out to me, and I think you're going to see in Houston what we saw in St. Louis those years. I mean, you with Lou now, you got to make the equation. It's when you get past the top 10 for the Astros, you get past that, you get to the Tyler Whites and the John Kemmers and these guys who...
College performers, basically.
Kemps, yeah. You know, I don't know if they're going to be... I think it's highly unlikely that any of them end up being stars in any way, shape, or form. But I think it's highly likely that a number of these guys end up having productive big league careers because they can do the thing that's the most important thing to do. They can hit.
You know, see, I'm actually was the dissenter on this one in our meeting. I did not have the Astros second. to me, the defense of them second is actually star power, not depth. Because their depth has been hollowed out by some of these trades. I look at the 20 to 30. I don't love it. Excuse me.
I can give you
But I love A.J. Reed. I've come around. I'm on board. The track record is the track record. The analytics say what the analytics say. I like your Ryan Howard comp on his career comp. I'm in on Martez. Francis Martez sounds extremely exciting. I like Alex Bregman, as high a floor guy as there is. I think he is a perfect trade piece for them. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's ever going to be an everyday player for the Houston Astros. I think he'll be an everyday player for somebody else.
If he's an everyday player for the Houston Astros, barring
something
injury,
something went wrong.
Someone had to get hurt because his value is at positions.
Right.
Can Alex Bregman play left field? Sure, he can play left field.
But what would you
be
do
the
that?
Purpose of
yeah,
that? Yeah,
exactly.
You know, I mean, that's just not something. And you also can tow a trailer with your Ferrari, but why would you do
exactly.
that? It doesn't make any sense.
Well put. Tucker and Cameron from this year's draft, $8 million of high school outfielders that I like. I like Joe Musgrove. I don't think he's an ace, but I think Joe Musgrove is a good back of the rotation starter. Could be a dude. David Paulino, super exciting. I'm all there. That top seven is stout. It's better than Atlanta's top seven for me.
They're closer to the big leagues.
And that's it. That's the biggest thing is it's closer to the big leagues and fewer injury concerns.
To run through that, Reed played double A last year. If Reed broke camp,
Martez finished in double A.
Martez double A. Bregman high A.
Bregman moved as quickly as any 2015 draftee did.
Bregman got to high A enough that your expectation is
double A.
He starts in double A.
Yeah.
Tucker and Cameron, they're the Appy League guys.
But at the same time, that's two of our top 10 guys from the draft. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're going to not sign Brady Aiken,
they signed three
do
of
what
our
they
top
did.
10.
And that's it. They signed three top 10 guys from the draft, all bats. These are, I mean, I know high school outfielder is a risky phylum of player, but they took
they
two of the better ones, and they did. So
they got two guys who have different, you know, Cameron's the up-the-middle guy, Tucker's the corner bat.
So $17 million bonus pool in the draft, they did pretty well with it. I mean, you're gonna control the draft. They did what they could. So I bashed them the year before for botching the Aiken thing, and they deserve praise for the way they recovered from it and handled it this year.
Musgrove, double A. Paulino, high A.
And scouts are so excited about Paulino and Martez.
Go the rest of the 10. Colin Moran, double A. Derek Fisher, high A. Michael Feliz made the majors.
Right.
Those are all guys. That's your top 10. And those are all guys, with the exception of the two first-round
right.
picks from last year.
Who should be double A or above in 2016.
All those other guys will be double A or above. That is, to me, one of the big things that stands out.
Agree
one of the
completely.
Other things that we have become more and more is that, yes, we are going to be aggressive at times with the top guys who are a long ways away. That being said, the attrition rate of guys who look really good when
yep.
they're in rookie ball or low A and then hit a wall when they hit double A, guys who've already made that jump to double A and shown they can do it, that
yeah.
puts us on board.
Absolutely. So actually, the Braves have more depth, and they should.
And they do.
Because
they
were singular focus in 2015 was to build a deep inventory of high-risk, high-reward prospects. And by having a big inventory, they would have a large, ensure themselves of having some of those guys get through the big leagues. It's just too many people to take out. Some of those guys are going
to
get through.
What the Braves win is the most improved award, and it's not even close. This is one of the most meteoric rises of a farm system, understandably, because they made a ton of trades.
And you, hey,
they've been aggressive on signings. It's going to get. And the thing about it is again, if you're talking about who is my in the clubhouse leader be number one next year, it's easily the Braves because
absolutely.
We also know that they're going to unload the bank come July 2.
Absolutely, and they pick third in the draft, so they will have a high bonus pool. So, and the other thing about this other kind of Braves factor is So last year they were 29th.
And they had earned 29.
They had earned 29 by being super cautious. Caution was thrown to the wind when John Hart got there. And they knew it. That's the thing is nobody validated our farm system ranking of the Braves being 29th in last year's handbook like the Braves. Because they knew it. That's why Frank Wren was let go. John Hart comes in with John Coppola holding over. They bring back Roy Clark. They kind of get the band back together. They bring in Gordon Blakely, Chad McDonald. They've got a really cast of very authoritative and long track record evaluators there. Brian Bridges takes over the scouting department. They bring Tom Batista back as a national cross-checker. These guys, these are the guys who made the Braves the Braves. Tom Batista was like the area scout for Freddie Freeman. Back when I wrote about Freddie Freeman, how some scouts thought he should pitch. Come on, Manuel. So the Braves have brought back a lot of evaluators they trust. So to them, it's not risky, JJ. To them, these aren't high-risk players. They trust their evaluators. And so the Braves are scary in a good way right now. But they knew that how thin their margin was previously and how caution doesn't mean that Tony DiMaggio didn't do things well as their scouting director. Hey, he drafted Simmons. He did. He drafted Evan Gattis. They had some wins. But the phylum of player, the first-round picks, the Sean Gilmartins, and that kind of and Jason Hirsch's, those cautious first-rounders, that's not the Braves' way, and they're back to the Braves' way now.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's that,
and it's exciting. Hey, you know what? It's exciting. And they're, I mean, it's just really cool to see a team bet on their scouts like that. And, you know, the Cardinals do it. They bet on their scouts. They also bet on their analytics. But the Braves are so it's a little bit different approach, even though John Coppola, again, is an analytically inclined general manager. But he's all in on this approach. And the way that you mitigate your risk is volume.
And the thing I'll say is that if you are looking at this, when you look at these rankings, another piece I wanted to throw out here. 1 through 3, they are, to me, a cut above. Like, the Red Sox are 4. We'll get to talking about them in a minute.
But I agree. There's a delineation.
There is a delineation. The difference from 1 to 3 is less. I'll put it this way. I think, it's very clear for us that the Dodgers are 1. That being said, I can entertain an argument. If you are all in on ceiling,
right,
you could argue that the Braves are 1.
I'll throw this in. Before the Craig Kimbrel trade, the Red Sox were in the hunt for 1. I'm not saying they would have been.
But you add in.
They
you
were
had
in the
Margot
hunt.
And Guerra
and Logan Allen and Azuaje. But especially, that's three. That was 3 of their top 10 guys that they traded.
Mm-hmm.
Logan Allen and then the two, Margot and Guerra. And those were up the middle guys. So that's where the Red Sox were much, it was much more of a group of four, a gang of four,
yes,
for us before that trade.
And after that,
what was it, the gang of four in China or a group of four? Gang of four.
But after that, to me, from the Red Sox, and you can go down to at least to me 12, there's not a massive amount of separation.
Correct.
In that group.
That group is really razor thin, and we debated that group for a long time.
A long time, because
I thought the Rockies were going to, for me, the Rockies were 6. I would have had them ahead of the Nats. But
they,
I get it.
They are 6.
I know the Nats are 5, though.
Yeah.
They would have been 5.
Yeah. But I'm saying,
obviously, I love Lucas Giolito and I love Trey Turner. So I get why the Nats are 5.
We went 5 because they have guys who are higher. I mean, again,
right,
the top end guys.
Right. I love the Rockies, but then John Gray has some hickeys. Brendan Rodgers
have,
they
have
a great
lot of guys
debut.
That are top 100 guys, but they don't have those same guys who are as high.
And that's it.
That's a little foreshadowing. I know this is shocking to tell you. Lucas Giolito ranks higher than any of the Rockies.
That's right.
Just a little foreshadowing.
Giolito greater than Gray. Big shock.
But
who'd have guessed?
But even down to the Pirates are 11. The Twins are 10. The Pirates are 11. The Reds are 12. Even down to those guys, I really like the Twins system. I really like the Pirates system. I really like the Red system. Those are all still in that group where I say, there's a lot here to like.
Hey, the Brewers at 9.
I think
of the Brewers as a top 5 caliber system. And they even got better even since we re-ranked. Isan Diaz was 9 in the
Diamondbacks
top 10.
Can't crack the top 10 for the Brewers.
55 extreme grade. Well, that's kind of the same grade we have on Josh Hader.
And
We like Josh Hader. He couldn't even crack their top 10 because they have, a lot of similar ceiling players.
The Brewers, again, when you talk about depth, the Brewers have guys at 20, 21, 22. You're like, I like that guy.
They really do. And, the Brewers, but at that at the same time, outside of Arcia, it's hard. And I like Lopez a lot. But, Brett Phillips, I like him a lot.
But
he
Brett
hasn't shown the power outside of Lancaster. So you kind of have to wonder. So all their players have another step to make. The Brewers actually, to me, are next to the Braves as a very likely to be in that top 3 next year.
Both of them could end up dropping because the guys could, some risky guys could have bad years.
Right.
Because the Brewers are going to graduate Arcia. And then it's
more than likely, yes.
I would, if they don't this year, considering what they have at shortstop, then they really are saying we are being very cut.
I'm just saying, Jonathan VR could be a 1-year stopgap.
Yeah. But you do look at it and say those teams are, they have a lot of upside there. backing, so we'll go in order, though. Back to the Red Sox. The Red Sox is about, it's the four tops, the fifth guy who kind of fits in with them, and then after that, it drops off pretty quick.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how you get to the Red Sox, and you get in the early teens, you're like, wow, it's pretty high up for Nick Longy, you know?
Right.
That's where you start thinking to yourself, I mean, I like him, but I didn't think he'd be 14 on the list. So the Red Sox probably is the most top-heavy list.
But that top...
What to say? There are four guys that we discuss in our show Friday night. So four of the top 50. Is there even a fifth in the top 100?
Yes.
There is? Okay. And I know there could have been a sixth. I do happen to like Sam Travis, Pora Hemplo. But we're talking about a totally different, potentially different ranking if they hadn't made that trade with the Padres. They paid a high price for Craig Kimbrel. I don't blame them for paying it. But they paid a high price in the Padres.
Especially because they also traded, Margot and Guerra are really talented players. And I don't know how they would have played for the Red Sox.
I agree. That doesn't mean that, I don't think they sold them low, or gave them away because they couldn't use them or whatever.
Right.
But
it wasn't like they said, please take these from us. But
that was a good trade for the Padres. I think it could be mutually beneficial, but I like that trade for the Padres. But
the Nationals at five are another system where it is all about the top end.
Star power. Yeah, that's a star power farm system for sure. I'm a little bit higher on Eric Fetty than most. I think we all have a little crush on Victor Robles right now. If you wanted me to choose a short season international prospect, that's kind of the guy. You know, for me, it's Victor Robles. He just sounds so exciting. And then, I think it's really almost a matter of having to make sure you don't have too much prospect fatigue on an A.J. Cole or Wilmer Defoe. I do think that both those guys are useful players.
He got Defoe. Defoe's only had 2 years in the spotlight.
Yeah, but
Cole has had much more than 2 years.
Cole's been around for a while.
AJ Cole has been around. Your 2010 high school guy. I mean, yeah, he's been around a long time.
But to me...
And he's been traded back and forth and back and
that's
forth.
Right. I'll say one common thread also, JJ, for all these teams that are top 10 organizations. I'm trying to see if there's an exception, but I don't think so. All these organizations have... pretty successful, strong international scouting departments. The Astros are a little bit more Johnny come lately to it, but they've obviously one way they have several Latin American prospects who are in their top 10. A couple of them be great trades, Martes and Paulino, where they picked them up.
Right.
Scott, very, very cheap. But all the other organizations that are top 10 are very international heavy. The Twins, one of the biggest differences in the Twins now and the Twins 10 years ago, well, the big league team 10 years ago was winning. But they were doing it in spite of the fact that they had no presence of the Dominican. But now, they aren't El Rey, but they have El Rey in their big league team from the Dominican program, Miguel Sano, and they have many other Latin American prospects. So that's really, that's a separator for these good teams.
They've drafted very well from Puerto Rico.
Very much so. But that's all these, the Phillies traditionally have done it. The Brewers haven't traditionally been a power there, but Arcia, obviously, big part of their number one prospect from their Latin program. So all these top-tier farm systems through 12, all those teams are very either active or have had some real successes, some real wins in Latin America. And that's a big reason. You really, in today's game, you just can't get to the top. You can't get there from here.
Bookmark this.
Yeah.
As because we're going through team by team, as you can tell. We can bookmark this because when we get to the Baltimore Orioles, we'll bring this back up.
That's exactly where I was headed.
I knew you were. I knew where you were going. We'll get there. They're a long ways away. Orioles fans, keep or stick around, but we won't be talking about your team for a little while. Sorry.
That's not a guarantor of being a top-ranked farm system. It just happened to... I think it's harder to do it through the draft.
The best way I can put it is this. When you saw the overreaction... the Moneyball overreaction of the early aughts, where teams said, "I'm just drafting college guys. I'm not drafting high school guys," and teams have gone away from that because it was dumb.
Right.
And the reason it was dumb then is the same thing we're talking about now.
Why would you close off?
Why?
Yeah.
You want to be open. To me, you ought to be open to all avenues. Where you are limited in talent acquisition, is. Nowadays, you can only spend so much money in the draft.
Yep.
No matter where you pick, you can only spend so much money. Internationally, you can have, there's more freedom, clearly.
More of a loophole. Bigger loophole.
There's a bigger loophole. But even with that, there still are significant restrictions on how you can spend.
Yep.
Your talent acquisition is limited that way. how it is not limited is you. There is no limit to how many scouts you could have, to how many different ways.
That's
you
a
scout,
great way to
put it. You can scout indie ball. You can scout internationally. You can scout Australia. You can scout the Asian game. Your teams. You can scout all these different ways.
Yeah.
You can bring in talent. Why would you say, you know what? Unless you are somehow an organization so financially limited that you can't do that, why would you not?
Well, the Orioles and the Marlins are the two teams that stick out to me there because they both thought they were almost like, it's almost like it was clever, like, hey, we're not going to use this international bonus pool money. We'll just trade it to other teams for other assets. And, I mean, those other teams were very easy to find that wanted the international bonus pool money because they see that as a significant asset as well. And it's just not a coincidence that the teams that didn't see the international bonus pool money as an asset are toward the bottom of the farm system rankings. I just, you know, like you said, it's like you said, it's very analogous to Moneyball. It's a good analogy. You're on a roll with analogies this week. That's good.
But number six, that fits one nicely to go back, because the Rockies' saving grace for a period of time
was
its international program and how it brought it. They couldn't develop a pitcher. They had much more trouble developing pitchers
domestically
than they did from international. But you look at the Rockies at six. Again, this is – we're not – trust me when we say this is not going to be all a happy, touchy-feely. We love every farm system.
Right.
But we really like this farm system because – what the Rockies have, again, they are one of those systems that they don't have the guy. They don't have that one guy that you turn to and say, okay.
Yes, lead pipe cinch top 10 guy. Maybe next year, maybe we might say that about Ryan McMahon. Maybe we'll say it about Brendan Rodgers. Maybe we'll say it about David Dahl if he's healthy for a full year.
Maybe Jeff Hoffman is, you know, taking that step forward. But
the next Aaron Cook.
But
my favorite comp.
But you have all these guys. I mean,
right.
Again, Trevor Story, who's number 8 on the Rockies list. Trevor Story is, I mean, he's an up and down guy. I mean,
he's
up and down, and I don't mean that as in he's an up and down major minor league guy. He is a guy who, if it all breaks right, it would not shock me if Trevor Story had an all-star season at some point.
Yeah, I agree. He's
all breaks wrong, it would not shock me if Trevor Story had a 10-year Triple-A career.
He's a really interesting guy because, you know, Trevor Story came out of the minor leagues like gangbusters, had a big first year at Asheville. Then he went to the Cal League, and he just struck out so much. He still strikes out a lot. That's still a hickey. But here's a guy who could be a middle-of-the-diamond player, second, short, or third. Does a lot of things well, has some power. I like Trevor Story. Now, I don't love him. I don't think he's a future star. But he's not in the bad place to hit in Colorado, and I think he can do a lot of things well. So that's your number 8 prospect, the guy who had the kind of year he had at Double-A, had some Triple-A time. And has had some ups and downs. I kind of like Trevor Story as your number 8 guy. It's a sign of a good farm system.
Right on top is number 10.
Yeah.
Now, just to preempt some of the questions, I know there are other places out there that are higher on Rymel Tapia.
Show me why.
But
that's what I wanted to know.
Right. And again, we like Rymel Tapia as a prospect.
Yeah.
But here are some things to give a little aside. Rymel Tapia doesn't have a lot of power, and probably with his approach, with his swing, that's never going to probably be a big part of his game.
Correct.
There are questions about, I mean, he's an outfielder with some athleticism, but he's a average center fielder at best.
Kind of a tweener.
Kind of a tweener.
Defensively. Potentially a center fielder, but that's a big yard in Coors.
But the biggest thing is that for a guy who, the hit tool is the carrying tool. The hit tool is his biggest tool. One thing I want to see is his contact rate, he has great hand-eye, but he strikes out 100 times a year.
Yeah.
This is not
Willens Astudillo.
Right. Willens Astudillo, who's not as good a prospect as by any stretch as Rymel Tapia, but that is the insane hand-eye where you can't strike him out.
Did we factor Astudillo into the Braves' farm system rankings? Because they didn't he sign with the Braves?
He did sign with the Braves. I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing him in spring training because I enjoy watching Willens Astudillo pitch. I really do. It is everyone at the ballpark I'm sure he hopes to be in Double-A. I hope he's in High A because he'll be Carolina, he'll be down the road, and I'll be watching a lot of Willens Astudillo.
But
that is what I'm saying is, but if Rymel Tapia is your number 10 prospect, that's a good farm system.
That's right. Both Tapia and Story would be much higher in other organizations, I think, because they've
number
had some success.
Number 1 on your Angels top 10.
Yeah, do we want to go there? I don't know if we want to go there.
We'll get back.
Of your other top 10 teams, the Rangers.
The Rangers is, again, top end guys.
Yes.
Mazzara, Gallo, Williams. That's...
I also liked their 2015 draft. It's high risk, high reward, but you know, you had Donovan Tate and Michael Mattiuello. Let's face it.
Dylan Tate.
Who's Donovan Tate? Why did I say Donovan Tate?
No. Who's Donovan Tate? You know who Donovan Tate is.
I know who he is, but why did I say that?
Yes.
Dylan Tate had a chance to go number one in the draft. This guy might be a steal at four, JJ. You know, midway through the year.
Luis Ortiz could be a guy who could go for the draft before. I mean,
love Ortiz. And again, a year and a half ago, Michael Mattiuello was the guy for the 2015 draft class. So it's a... Absolutely. Hey, maybe you have Tanner Shepherds. Maybe you have more than that.
I'll put it this way. We were talking about the Dodgers with Funkhauser, who they didn't sign, and Buehler.
Buehler,
you know, the Dodgers got Buehler. Buehler versus Mattiuello. There's a hot lot of risk there in both cases. Buehler's higher floor.
That's a good question.
Buehler's higher floor, but Mattiuello is significantly, to me, higher ceiling.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. No, there's no doubt about that. So,
if you're talking about a guy who ranks, who's not going to be a top, who's like a back of the top 10 to 11, 10 to 15 type guy, I'll take the risk.
And the Rangers, we know this is par for the Ranger course. They're going to have an active Latin American program.
I was going to say, another team of a great international program.
Yeah, and they're aggressive. They don't mind. They're going to be aggressive in Latin America, and probably a little bit more of a high on following the rules in Latin America these days too. That's one other aspect there. For some reason, our draft database isn't working. Make a mental note.
Okay.
Not working. Philadelphia Phillies. Really, the Phillies rank here, JJ. They have incrementally.
Hey,
I guess.
Before we get into the trades,
but they're linked to the Rangers. Is why I was going to get there. They're ranked here, not only because of this, but in part because of some Rangers. You know, the big Cole Hamels trade.
A trade that could benefit both teams in the long term.
But I did want to point out that they've drafted hitters pretty well of late. J.P. Crawford, Andrew Knapp, Cornelius Randolph. Those are three of their top 10 prospects, and those are all guys, bat first guys, and guys who. And especially two of those guys, Knapp and Crawford, have a chance, especially Crawford for sure. Knapp has a chance, not 100% sold. He's going to be a catcher, but I think he will. So that's what I'm most excited about, JJ, is they have up-the-middle prospects who can hit. And
I'd rather have up-the-middle prospects who can hit than other up-the-middle prospects who can just field.
That's right. If you're going to do one, hit first.
I want both.
That's right. I want both. And hey, J.P. Crawford does both. That's why he's jacked up toward the top of the top 100. Andrew Knapp, we're not so sure. That's why he's not. We won't see him in the Baseball America Top 50 show on MLB Network Friday the 12th, 9 p.m. Eastern time.
And that's a good chance for me to jump in and remind you again. I'll remind you, if you don't have your prospect handbook, if you're enjoying this podcast, you want your prospect handbook because this is thousands and thousands and thousands of words just like this. That's
words.
What it is.
That's a lot of words.
It's rankings.
Let's round up our the rest of the top 12, 13. We're going to go 13 deep. It's kind of a little delineation of our and it goes a baker's dozen donuts of our farm system rankings. But the Phillies naturally kind of ranked next to the Rangers at 7 and 8. Rangers at 7, Phillies at 8. The Brewers and the Twins at 9 and 10. Thanks, here's some geography. But these teams are both, they're different stages. The Twins... won last year in the big leagues, to an extent, more than they had in seven years.
They didn't get there, but they were in it.
And I think, JJ, they have the farm system talent, whether they want to trade or by graduating those guys in the big leagues, to make that next step. Jose Berrios should help their rotation. Byron Buxton, everyday center fielder. Max Kepler is close to being ready to help. That said...
Jorge Polanco as a utility piece in a lot of different places.
Absolutely. That said... I'm very excited for the Brewers about where their farm system is. And if it weren't for the Braves, the Brewers had the biggest leap in our farm system rankings this year. And they did it the way we're talking about it with these other teams. It wasn't just the draft. It wasn't just trades. It was draft, trade, international.
Right. Draft, trade, international. And you look at it now, and the thing that jumps out is this is a system that could be really good. It's to come. I mean, that's what they're doing. I mean, right now, everything in Milwaukee is not about 2016. It's about down the road. It's not surprising that you know they have a GM, David Stearns, who just went through this rebuilding process in Houston, which in the end worked out very well in Houston.
Right.
You know, and now Milwaukee's in the early stages of that. But the difference is that it should be a little quicker than it was. Now, the problem they have is they are in the deathmatch division of deathmatch divisions.
That's the hard part. That's the really
hard
part.
You look at the Cubs and you say, really, again, baseball, the great thing about baseball is the best team doesn't always, you know, on paper, there is no reason that the Brewers should catch the Cubs anytime soon.
Right.
There is none.
There isn't.
And you know, I mean, the Cubs have young, big league talent that's already proven it. They have a ton more money to spend than the Brewers.
They do have farm system talent now. It's just riskier. It's unproven. They're not going to be one of these top 13. I actually wanted to ask you about that. I know we're a little out of order here. But what do you think of our Cubs ranking? I've seen other rankings that have the Cubs as a top 5, top 10 farm system.
I don't see it.
I don't see it, JJ. What? I mean, I don't see it.
All we can do is our rankings. But on our rankings, I can explain it this way. Okay. Let's just go through. Got your prospect handbook.
I like Gleyber Torres.
Gleyber Torres, he's a really good prospect.
What's not to like about Gleyber Torres?
Gleyber Torres is...
I like the tools.
He's not a top 10 prospect, but he's an elite prospect.
I like the tools. I like the makeup. I like the position. I like everything about Gleyber Torres.
The production he's done so far.
That's right.
He's young. He was a low A guy who got up to high at the very end of the year, so he's a little further away.
I like the track record. Go back and read when he was the number 2 prospect in the July 2 class, and Ben Badler wrote like... Hey, this guy has track record. This guy's hit since he was really young.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he was 16. So everything, all the arrows on Gleyber Torres pointing up. Hey, I like Wilson Contreras. I don't mind a catcher. They don't check age when you're behind. They don't check your ID behind the plate. It clicked. And he's always had the tools. I didn't think he had tools like he had. Like he showed in Double A this year. No one expected that this guy was going to be a batting champ in the Southern League.
Right, but there is a little bit of caution in that, like...
Still a lot of caution for
because,
me.
Because, for one, that season came out of nowhere.
Correct.
There was a prospect before that.
He was on the depth chart, but he wasn't in the top 30.
But he had never done anything like he did last year. And you hope that it is... You know, again, we root for prospects.
Yeah.
We hope that it all came together. He's taken that step forward.
Absolutely. And
but that being said, if he took a step back this year, wouldn't be shocking at all.
I like Ian Happ. I don't know where he's going to play, and I have a little caveat that he struck out a lot in the Cape and college last year, and he wasn't playing in the SEC. He was playing in the AAC, the American Conference, a good conference, not a great conference, not the SEC, not the ACC. Dwayne Underwood. I like Dwayne Underwood. I don't love Dwayne Underwood. It's not a swing-and-miss fastball, and his secondary stuff comes and goes. He's a decent – if that's your best pitching prospect – you don't have strong pitching prospects. That's the way it is. You'd rather he was your second or third best mm-hmm. guy. That's
Dylan Cease could be that number one guy
correct.
On a pitching prospect list a year from now.
And my pick to click for a year from now is that it's going to be Oscar De La Cruz.
Right. Both of those guys. But both of those guys, Dylan Cease, coming off of TJ, has thrown 24 pro innings.
Right.
Oscar De La Cruz.
First year in the States as a converted guy.
First year in the States. We're not going, like, unless you're Anderson Espinosa, where you are showing... Where scouts are calling and saying, this is the best stuff I've seen from this age
right.
since Felix Hernandez, we're not ranking you that high.
De La Cruz is somewhat analogous to a David Paulino or even a Francis Martez in the Astros system. He's next year's breakout guy.
Right. If
but
you told
right
me that
now,
he's where they are next year, absolutely.
Right. But there's some risk right now.
Right.
Then you're looking at, you know...
Albert Almora?
Yeah. Billy McKinney?
Albert Almora, again...
Jamer Candelario.
You like Albert. I'd say you're a little higher in Albert Almora than I am.
Right.
But
he almost, I think he might have been in my top 100, my personal 100. I think he
was. What is Albert Almora going to be?
Again, my comp form is always, best case scenario is Aaron Rowand. And he's a little bit less physical than Aaron Rowand. Probably a little bit better field to hit. Similar type of defender. Aaron Rowand won a gold glove, even though he wasn't a burner in center field. That's my career comp. They don't look necessarily the same, but their tools wind up being pretty similar. I think Albert Almora actually kind of fits for the Cubs, especially if you get the DH in the National League. Jason Hayward slides to right field. Jorge Soler goes to left field. Soler, smash. Schwarber to DH. Almora fits in as like your 7-hole hitting, gold glove caliber defensive
right.
player in center field.
But on the right.
Glue guy. I think he's got intangibles that make him a better player than the numbers might say. But that said, he's not a slam dunk top 100 guy. Not for me.
No.
He doesn't do enough. He just doesn't do enough. And Billy McKinney's similar.
I was reading
different way.
We were very high on Billy McKinney at the midseason, and probably a little bit too high, to be honest. I mean, like
right.
we said,
not
our midseason,
not probably, we definitely
we
were.
Our midseason rankings are more volatile because it's reefer looks.
That's right. It's a shorter sample size.
It's a shorter sample size. You're talking to scouts who've seen him once. They haven't had that chance to swing back around and see him again. And
Also, our midseason
And he had a great first half.
And the midseason update doesn't include how these guys do over a full season. Mm-hmm. It's midseason, include draft guys.
He had an incredible first half in Myrtle Beach. And then second half in AA, it was a little bit more kind of in line with what he's always done. Which, again, Billy McKinney is a very good prospect.
I think McKinney, and honestly, to me, there's not a huge difference between McKinney and Winker. Winker's done it more. He's done it a little more authoritatively. But there's not a huge difference in those two guys.
No.
So that's why I'm not as high on Winker. They're bat-first guys, but the other tools, none of their other tools grade out more than a 5, and some of them are 40, 45-ish. So you're really banking all on a 6 or better hit tool. That's my problem with both prospects. But I do like Winker over McKinney. So maybe, you know, if you like Winker a lot, you probably should like McKinney a lot, too.
I think we really like their draft from last year, but not as guys. Like Hudson, we like DJ Wilson, absolutely. We like Donnie Deweese. Those are all guys we really like.
And I like the guys from the year before. Sands, I like Steele, I like Trevor Clifton. I see upside with the Cubs. Mark Zagunas, I see upside. But all those guys, Mark Zagunas is a non-profile guy. Where's the power? Trevor Clifton had like a 390 ERA, and you're kind of wondering there's raw ability there, but... So if he winds up better than Dwayne Underwood, wouldn't shock me. But you know what? If neither of them made it, if Dwayne Underwood wound up being the guy, none of that would surprise me. I think they're a little bit more volatile system. So we might have them a little low in our farm system rankings, but they're not a top 10 system. I don't think there's any way for me the Cubs are a top 10 system. You're convicted on those two AA outfielders, and I'm not.
And which is fine. They were the number one system last year.
And they won 97 games. Yes. And they graduated Schwarber and Bryant and Russell. I mean, come on. You know, all three.
And Soler.
And Soler. All four of those guys were in our top 20. So, high on the...
But that's why, again, but this that top 20, which again, the Cubs doing it, they did it as impressively as any team ever does it.
Yeah.
But that being said, that right there is exactly why ranking in the top 20, the top 30... means a lot for our rankings.
That's it. Because, great point.
Because the reality of it is that Chris Bryant already has provided more value than a large number of the guys who rank 50 to 100 on our list ever provide.
He's probably provided more value as a number 2 pick in the 2013 draft than Mark Appel will in his career. You know, even if Mark Appel turns into Luke Hochaver, a number 1 overall pick who winds up being a good middle reliever, Chris Bryant's probably already provided more value. Let's face it. So after the Brewers were 9, Twins 10. JJ, we like the Twin system. I could see them being higher.
But to touch on the Brewers a little bit,
yeah, those two teams have some similarities in that they've spanned the globe. And really, the Twins haven't done it much through trade. The Brewers a little bit more. The trade has been a little bit bigger factor, whereas with the Twins, the international has been a little bit bigger factor.
The Brewers, you look at it and say, what I really like for them is their 2014 draft was the ultimate, let's put on, we're sitting at the roulette wheel and let's put it all on white 22, whatever it is, And it may hit, it may not. It very well may not. It may be that Monty Harrison, Jacob Gatewood, Cody Medeiros, 1, 2, or 3 of them can end up being significant guys. But you love the fact that they don't need those guys. This isn't the Marlins system where those guys have to be 1, 2, and 3 in the on the list.
Right, exactly. And I like what the Brewers were able to do in 2015 their draft a whole lot. And that's so I like the risk, high risk, high reward of what turned out to be Bruce Seid's last draft. But we love Trent Clark. We're in on Cody Ponce. We like Demi Arimelay a lot.
And Nathan Kirby has a nice lottery ticket. Check back, after the surgery, and let's see.
That's it.
So that's almost like a bonus pick down the road.
It is like a bonus pancake, to use an old Lacey Lusk term. But yeah, I like the Brewers' farm system. They made a big move up our rankings, and I think deservedly so. And again, the trades didn't hurt. But
the Twins are not that far. They're 10, and they're not that far from 5.
Right. No, I
agree.
Byron
Buxton. When we talk about elite prospects matter, Byron Buxton remains, by 2 at-bats, a very elite prospect.
Yep, absolutely. No, I agree that I like the Twin system. I like their pitching a little bit better than the teams behind them, immediately behind them, Pittsburgh. And I like their hitters better than I like the Reds, who are at 12. So Again, the Twins were a little bit higher on my personal farm system rankings. When we were first putting the book together, I really thought the Twins would wind up ranking a little higher. I think that we were hard graders on their BA grades in the book. Mike Berardino was a very hard grader. And I think that when we put all the BA grades into the spreadsheet, I guess Brian Kinney would have called it the shredder. I think that brought them down our rankings a little bit. I actually, the last thing I did in the handbook editing, literally the last thing, was jacking up a couple of Twins grades. And I still think I could have done a couple guys higher. And I'm really thinking more toward the back. But I think it actually wound up, their average, I think, wound up a little bit lower than where I was.
But that being said, a lot of these guys on the back end, I really like them, but they're the guys who don't help you rank on the talent ranks much because they're relievers, and relievers, you get a knock.
That's true.
There's the Jake Reeves, the JT Chagwas, the Nick Birdies. They have a lot of really interesting relievers. I'm not sure that all of them are going to hit because usually they don't.
I just think their average would have ticked up a little higher when we put them into the analytics part of our of this process.
But they do have a lot of those guys. And they have a lot of those guys. I mean, I think their bullpen, they're going to be able to make a very young, homegrown bullpen. A lot of talent there to put something together pretty interesting over the next couple of years.
My throat feels like it's about to swell up and close, so we should wrap.
We will return with the rest tomorrow if John's throat is capable.
You might get Matt Eddy pinch hitting if he's feeling okay. Matt's been under the weather himself as well, so...
Or maybe it's just the solo JJ just talks. I could talk for 3 hours.
About these rankings, you probably could.
I really could.
But this was fun, JJ. Yeah, I was low energy to start, and I got super jacked as soon as we started.
I knew you would.
What a shock.
I think I predicted that before it ever started.
You did, and I apologize to Sarah Hyatt McDaniel next door in the office to have to hear us screaming at each other about this. We're actually not angry about it at all. We're really just enjoying ourselves. But we're
loud people.
That's what she gets for moving her office closer to ours. So.
We're loud people. But do remind you, before you go away, just remind you, baseballamerica.com tomorrow. If you enjoyed this, you're going to want to read. We got to have the top 100 prospects up at Baseball America, 100 through 51 during the day, 51 through 50 at the MLB Network show, 9 o'clock tomorrow night. 10 o'clock, we'll have that up. We'll be on Twitter with it. I'm at JJCoop36. He's at John Manuel BA, at Baseball America, obviously vital for that. And also, but we won't be done then. Monday we'll be chatting about it.
I think you're going to man Twitter. I think I'm going to man Snapchat tomorrow night. So if you're on Snapchat, Read BA is our Snapchat. But I enjoy the Snapchat medium only in a professional function. I understand it's used for other things, but I have fun with Snapchat.
We will also be but Twitter, Facebook, Baseball America on Facebook, Twitter at Baseball America. All the social media as well, but we hope you enjoy the show tomorrow night. We know we sure had a fun putting it together with the MLB Network guys. It was
Just think about it this way. They already have a prospect show. They don't need to do another prospect show for us. They do it because they like having Baseball America be part of it. It's the 35th year of Baseball America. It's our 26th top 100. You know, Alan Simpson and all the people who came before us, JJ, kind of invented prospect ranking. We carry the torch and continue that legacy, and it's really an honor. And I mean this with utmost sincerity. It's really an honor that they include us and give us a show on MLB Network. They don't have to. They do it because they feel like they should, because it's better for baseball fans if Baseball America's voice is heard like that. And that just means an awful lot. And
we
couldn't appreciate it more, and we hope that people at home watch it and enjoy it. Enjoy watching it as much as we enjoyed doing it. So for JJ, I'm John. We'll see you Friday night at 9 o'clock on MLB Network, and we'll see you here on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.